Good afternoon, I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 242nd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. My guest today is Suzanne Ali. Her family is from Khartoum, Sudan. They fled to Egypt when she was 8 years old, and when she was 14, they moved to Maine, where she started learning English while attending Portland High School. Suzanne graduated from SMCC, and now she works as a direct support specialist at Shalom House while attending USM, where she's working toward her bachelor's degree in social work, and she has no plans of stopping learning anytime soon. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Suzanne.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Your parents had 5 children and they felt so strongly that they were not safe that they left the country and moved to Egypt. What were the stressors like that forced them to leave their home country of Sudan with 4 children in tow?
Well, we are a total of 5. The reason that they flew from Sudan itself, it was just the war that was happening that started back in 2001 in Darfur. They flew the war from Darfur to Khartoum, and there the situation was still bad. It wasn't just a bright place for a family of 7 to be around. So my parents decided to leave and to find a better future for us.
Because of the war in Darfur, is that the reason your family was moving?
Yes.
Yeah.
The war in Darfur and through that to Khartoum because the situation is still bad.
Yeah. With the dictator?
Yes. At the time, we had a dictator till last year, 2019. We had one of the biggest revolution in the world, and the Sudanese people managed to get rid of him.
That's really huge. And think of the lives one regime can change. Think of how many people have left Sudan.
A lot. A lot of people. I mean, Sudan, since 2011, since it split to Sudan and South Sudan, we were the biggest country in Africa. It's a rich country that we shouldn't be going through what we are going through as a nation. And with that regime just destroyed a lot of lives that could have been doing a lot of good things in the world.
Yes. Yeah. And for 6 years, when you had left Sudan, you lived in Egypt. Were you all considered refugees there in Egypt?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And how are refugees from Sudan treated in Egypt? What was your experience there like?
I mean, well, we try to consider Sudan and Egypt are one country, but when it comes to political issues, they are not. And in terms of Egyptian people treating Sudanese people, we have the good and the bad, but a lot were treated very badly. And until today, we still face racism in Egypt. And so I just pray for those who are still there, because just recently, we had 3 young men were killed by Egyptian, and our government hasn't done anything yet to support those people. So we're still in the process of fleeing from Sudan for a bad situation, coming to Egypt for like a better situation, but yet we still face racism. So there's a lot still that needs to be done for the Sudanese community in Egypt.
Yeah, and the racism comes in terms of just sheer violence. Is there other racism, like keeping you from jobs or school?
Yes, it's very hard when sometimes you can't even leave your own house because you just don't know who you're going to face and what you're going to hear. So it's racism comes in all ways.
Yeah, it's a hard life for refugees.
It's very difficult, and especially for families who have younger kids, because they have to like attend to schools or so, and so they would face racism in the school itself. So it's really hard for a parent to trust the community that they are living in.
Yeah, for sure. And humans are adaptable. You and your family were surely put to the test on that front. entering very different culture with different foods and dress and language, really twice, you know, a bigger jump here to the United States when you came at age 14, but it must have been really exhausting.
It was very, very terrifying, but it was for a good cause that we made it here because, well, we were there in Egypt as refugees, but our process was going just so slow when we entered the United Nations, and it got fast enough when my mother got so ill and she had it to have a surgery and immediately surgery. And that's when they fastened our process to come to the U.S.
Because it can take years in limbo.
Yes, we still have people that came to Egypt around the same time that we were at Egypt, and they're still there.
Wow.
Yeah. It could take the longest as you can think of. It's a process.
Yes.
Yes.
What do you think was lost for your family as you kept relocating and adapting to different cultures? I mean, there's only so much time in a day. And if you're spending time adapting, you're not spending time doing the things you would have been doing if you were, you know, nestled into your home in a safe way.
I had to grow up away from my extended family, which it's something that I feel like everyone should have to be with their families. And I do have one brother who's our older brother, and we are four girls and a brother. Back in 2007, the only brother that we have, the government actually took him for some times, which we didn't know where he was at until 2010 when we came here. Then we knew that he was alive and he was arrested and all of that. So it was just a long process to just go away all of this time without knowing where my brother was. That was a huge, huge, terrifying time for us in this family.
I think that would be utterly excruciating to leave the country not knowing where your son was or your brother.
Right. It was very hard for my mother not knowing where her son was or was he alive or not. All of these memories are still like in the back of our head every time we talk to him. Now that we know where he's at and we are in contact with him, it's very nice. It's just a blessing to have him like in our lives back.
Yeah, that's so powerful. You got to see him when you went back for your last visit, didn't you?
I did. Went back to Sudan two times, actually. I went in 2006 and 2017. I did get to see him, and that was like 10 years.
Do you look like him?
I actually do. Out of my siblings, I think him and I do have that facial expression. Yeah.
I bet it was just a wonderful day to get to be in each other's arms again.
He was waiting at the airport like hours and hours before our flight arrived. And we were just so excited. I went with my younger sister and we were like, oh my God. And especially, it was a huge deal for my younger sister who did not see him for a very, very long time. And as a young girl, she doesn't have like enough memories with him as my other sisters and I do have memories with him. So it was her first time like seeing him. So it was just huge. It was a lot. The whole entire airport was looking at us. It was just a moment of joy.
That's thrilling. Yeah. Is your youngest sister even able to speak to your oldest brother?
Right now?
Does he know English?
He does a little. Yes, uh-huh. He does speak a little English. Yep, yep.
And your youngest sister just speaks maybe a little Arabic.
She does. She's way more Americanized than anyone else. And she barely speaks Arabic now. Yeah, she barely speaks Arabic.
It's amazing to be distant from one another in a family, even with language.
Right, right.
What do you think were some of the tools that your family used to keep life going as smoothly as possible when you first arrived here in the United States? How did your family make that happen?
I remember when we first got here, we came here and I do have an aunt here, my mother's sister, and we stayed with them for a while. And the first day that we moved into our own apartment, I remember we had a whole meeting about, okay, this is a new life, this is a new place, this is a whole different new culture that you guys will have to adapt to it, and just giving bunch of advices and things that we should do or shouldn't do. So it's just like a parent's talk. And I remember my dad saying, we are here for a reason, and we are here for you guys to have a better future. We flew Sudan, we flew from Egypt, we dealt with a lot, but now it's your turn, and this is the land of opportunity, so use it wisely. I remember that, and here we are.
Yeah. What did you imagine then that you'd like to do with this opportunity?
It was a lot for me to think, because just starting freshman in high school, everything was completely different. I had really hard time. I spoke very little English, but I think at the time we had teachers who were very, very helpful to new Mainers or for ELL classes students. That did help me a lot to get through like my first semester. But it was a lot for me to adapt to this culture.
Do you remember any of the do's and don'ts that were in that first speech on your first day here from your family?
I do, because my dad, typically African, older, the only thing that he can think of America was what he saw on TV. He saw a lot of drugs. He saw a lot of killing. He saw a lot of like crimes. So most of his don't, like, don't hang out with the wrong people. Don't do what other people do unless it's a right thing for you to do. The do ones, like, do what best for you. Do anything that would benefit you. Do something that you can help yourself and help this community that welcomed you. So, yeah.
I love it. I think people assume, a lot of times, Americans assume that immigrants feel so lucky to have been resettled here. But, you know, if you've been watching shows about car chases and police violence, yes, you might not be all that excited. I imagine it's terrifying to send your children off to a school that they're going to be speaking English. You can't even know what they're doing.
Right. I mean, I look at it as we had worse. We have people like just would come and attack you in your own home, and you might be alive, you might not be alive. So think of that as, okay, now we are here, we are in our own apartment where no one can enter unless we accept them for them to enter. So in a way, this is a whole opportunity, yes, that we can take advantage of. This is why we're here. Yeah.
Yeah, beats the heck out of war, even if it's big and scary. You're not afraid of big and scary things. You've learned a lot of tricks along the way.
Yes, it's not fun memories to have. But again, I do think of them because I do know people are still in there. And I was privileged enough to leave that place, but they are still there.
Yeah.
And they still struggle till today. Yeah. Yep.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Suzanne Ali. She understands firsthand about the kinds of life stressors that can profoundly impact your mental health. Suzanne is working and studying within the field of social work. Mental health advocacy has become a passion for you. I wonder what made you so deeply interested in helping immigrants with mental health issues.
I thought of myself just moving here. It was hard. I went through a lot. I mean, it's a new place. I didn't have friends. I didn't have anyone that I know that I can go back to. Until later on, when I came out of my comfort zone and met people. But before that, I think it was a phase of depression, just changing from culture to a whole different culture. And I needed to do something because I know I can do better. And so I just started talking to my counselor and so on until I graduated. I did the early graduation from Portland High School. And when I attended SMCC, my advisor actually, she's like, all right, you seem like you are a person who likes to help. So why don't you try the social work field? And that's what got me to start with that. Yeah.
I just think of what a big asset you're going to be as a social worker in your community. I think people are really reluctant to access social work as immigrants because they have to explain so much. There's such a big chance they're not going to be understood. But someone like you might be really easy to talk to for a kid who's new in the community or an adult who needs transitional support or is experiencing grief and loss, not only of their culture, but perhaps PTSD from war and all kinds of other substantial mental health challenges.
Right, right. And a lot of immigrants who are here, even the ones that have been here for so long, they still struggle with the bad memories that they brought with them. And it's really hard for someone who never been through it before to, you can listen to the person, but yet you wouldn't feel the same way as this person who has been there and who dealt with it. So it's good for our community to have that person who they can connect with in all kind of levels, like maybe the same language, maybe same culture, all of that can make a huge difference.
Yeah. And of course, when a population first arrives, you're not going to have other Sudanese people to speak to. But in time, the young people grow up and go to college and become psychologists. And then there are really a lot of very highly qualified people for them to speak to.
And then, yes. And I think that's what our Sudanese community right now, we do have a lot of great leaders in Maine. As you know, some of them are working hard to have our elders have a better understanding of this culture that they are in now and their kids are growing up in.
Yeah. What do you wish every immigrant understood about mental health the way you perceive it?
Well, when we talk about mental health, it's a huge topic, not just for immigrants, but I kind of like I specify just to immigrants because this is not their homeland and not just Africans, anyone who came from a different place. Mental health is an issue that people until today are afraid to admit it. And if we got to a point where we can admit that it is an issue, I might be going through it, it's okay for me to talk about it. And it's okay for the community to accept me the way I am. So for our immigrants, we still have to raise more awareness around that.
Yeah, there's a lot of reluctance in the immigrant community to access mental health services, in part because they're afraid their kids may be taken away or they may be misunderstood. What kinds of assurances do you give immigrants who might need mental health but are afraid to access it?
It's different from person to another because, as you said, we do have parents who are afraid to talk about it, thinking that, okay, if I did say it, then my kids will be taken away because I'm not in my mentally right set. And so they won't talk about it and they would just deal with it in their own way, which later on it might be worse. But we do encourage all of the families, talk to your loved ones, talk to your PCP, talk to whoever that you trust, knowing that it's only for like good cause and for a positive outcome. So, and we make sure that when they do that, let's say talk to a PCP, they have someone who they trust from their family with them. And that way we ensure that they are getting the services that they need.
Yeah, it's probably always a good idea for us to take someone with us to important appointments.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If someone's feeling scared or depressed or has feelings of suicidality, what would you recommend? Where can they go to get help?
See, this is a great question, and I wish a lot of people actually do look and listen to this. I've recently lost my cousin who committed suicide, and I think a lot of people in Portland might know about this because it was all over the news. he lit himself on fire. And that's just bring me back to mental disability. It is a thing. And if you do know that you're not okay, then talk about it. And for us as a society, we need to learn how to approach people with mental disability. So for his situation, if he used the hotline crisis, or that we do have a lot of sources that can help you when you have like thoughts of harming yourself or others. So all of these resources, people need to know more about them just in case if any of that happened. And I'm sure for my cousin, if he were aware of the crisis hotline, or like just even call 911 and say, hey, I am not okay, then they would have helped him. But because he doesn't know about the hotline crisis, so yes, sadly enough, we did lose him a month or so ago.
I'm so sad about that loss. You had said he was newer to the United States and really didn't know about 774 help or 211 or even 911. That could have helped.
It could have helped a lot. He was new. He's been here for, I would say, 2 years plus. So he only knows the basic things around the neighborhood. He still doesn't know much about, I'm not even sure if he was aware enough about like mental health in general. And that's why we need to keep raising awareness about that topic in general, and especially for our youth, since they're dealing with both cultures, from being Sudanese to being an American, sometimes not fitting with this culture and not fitting with the American culture. So they might be going through a hard time, but they are afraid to talk about it because, oh, I don't know, who am I going to talk to? My parents might not understand me, and I can't talk to the outsider because then they might judge me. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel so sad for the loss of your friend and cousin. I know, yes. You were close in age and more than just related, right? You were connected.
Yeah. Yes. He was very close to my age, and we were friends. We were buddies. We did a lot together. He was a very happy person. He loved people. He loved children and animals. So we do have like a lot of great memories together, and yeah, it was still grieving.
Oh, of course. And looking back, you probably see signs that you didn't see when it was happening.
Yes, yes. And as much as I tried to talk to him, and some other cousins tried to talk to him, but yet it was the fact that you, as a person, you have to admit it, that you are not okay. You do need help. And you need to be willing to accept the help others are offering you. And with him, we just couldn't make it to that level.
Yeah, it takes a terrific amount of courage to ask for help.
Yes.
What do you hope to do with your career going forward? You're one of those people who is working hard and putting yourself through college. You're partway through your bachelor's degree in social work. What's your end goal?
Well, right now, I am doing as much as I can with my Sudanese community, working with our youth to make sure that they are on the right track, make sure that they are graduating high school, making sure that they are having every essential thing that they need. And with my career, I'm just hoping that I can create an open atmosphere to both our elderly and our young people to come together and create that big Sudanese community that we wish I had when we first arrived here to Maine.
And do you have educational goals as well to support that?
I do. I think I've been working with great people who are actually willing to help in this goal. I am planning on opening my office, like a social work case management office, very soon. So that would be open specifically saying for our Sudanese people, in case if they need any help around like mental health education, I should be there providing all the resources that I can have and give them.
So you figured out how to do what you love to do and how to make meaningful community connections and help other people along the way.
Yes, I just feel it's very important. We, as a Sudanese community, we are not a big population here in Maine. So I feel like it should be easy for us to be connected all together and to give what we know to our elders so they can be on the same page with their kids. So just raising awareness and doing more education around mental disability.
Yeah. And if you keep going on this trajectory and just keep going to school, one day you'll be a psychologist.
That is a goal. Hopefully I would have my own practice one day.
Yes, I think it's in the cards. You're just the person. You understand this on a personal level. You understand it on an academic level. And you have genuine motivation to help other people. It's quite beautiful.
Yeah, I think right now all the work that I do, it's good and nice to offer the help to others. But it would be nice if I can do it professionally so I can help more people, not just our Sudanese community, but yet our American community as well.
Yeah, I think you're going to be great.
Thank you.
Yes. Suzanne, you are a beautiful young woman in heart and mind and deed. Thank you so much for being my guest today on New Mainers Speak.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me this opportunity to share my story and to let the people know and raise more awareness around mental disability. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Suzanne has selected for us. Can you tell us about why you chose this song?
The song I chose, it's a Sudanese Arabic song. And the reason I chose this, as I said previously, just 2019, we had one of the biggest revolution. And this revolution meant so much to every Sudanese individual because it was started by females and it was led by females for many, many years. These females, their voices were not heard. No one would listen to them. But as the years goes by, we have improved. And now we have females who are doing exactly the same jobs as men are doing. And this song just encourage women to keep going and just letting young girls know that you can be a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, whatever you want to be. Yes, you can achieve that goal. So this song means a lot to me, and I'm sure a lot of the Sudanese people who will hear this, they will enjoy it as well.
And it's called Sudania.
Sudania.